Anxiety Labradoodles. Hello. Welcome. It is so good to be with you again. Today I have, what do I have? Another episode. Look at that. This episode features the incredibly talented Ashley Brooke Roberts. Ashley is a comedian, writer, currently writing for NPR's Ask Me Another. I don't know Ashley too well. I've known her a long time, though, and I've always admired her work, and I've had this sense that she would be awesome for this podcast, and she absolutely was. I can't wait for you to hear it. Ashley, I got to take a sip of water. It's hot here. I got to take some water, and it's going to make a sound. It's ice. Would it have mattered if I mentioned it or not? Could you have just dealt with that sound? Probably. This is real-time neuroses. I'm going to power through it. I'm not going to record again because this is the Anxiety Lab. Ashley, my point is, she is a hilarious comedian, but I want to say I just love her way of existing as a creative. She's often pursuing these really cool ideas that are just super inventive, but they don't always fit into a commercial category. And I think that takes courage. Sometimes that can cause anxiety. We talk about this a little bit because we're in a industry that tends to reward people that focus their efforts on, you know, doing one thing really, really well in a way that's packageable and visible. And to just keep, pumping out a certain type of content. And so to venture out and follow these various threads of curiosity the way that she does is absolutely commendable. For example, one of her projects recently was, this is kind of for the virtual work from home era that we're still a little bit in, which is Ashley live streamed herself working at her desk for an hour, I think every day for a while. That way, if you're working from home, you can have the feeling of a virtual co-working space. So I recommend checking that out. I think that's an awesome idea. You can get some work done at your desk with Ashley. And at this point, I want to also say, if you're a fan of the podcast, you might have noticed that this season features a higher percentage of guests that are not mindfulness teachers or mental health experts, but rather, you know, just like creative people like Ashley, like Matt Susich or Liz Moore, who are working with their own anxiety and just have thoughts about this stuff, have thoughts about how to feel better. And this was intentional. I do have some more experts coming up, but I think I wanted to, for a while at least, talk to just other people about what they're going through, share with them what I'm dealing with, because that to me is where all of this wisdom and these teachings get fleshed out and actually become three-dimensional. What I'm figuring out is that 5 to 10%, that's a made-up number, but you could follow the gist of what I'm saying. 5 to 10, let's say 5 to 10. Yeah, 5 to 10. No, I just convinced myself it's no longer made up. I'm standing by this. 5 to 10% of the work is learning more stuff, acquiring, you know, tools, teachings, you know, whatever. And then the other 90% is, for me, just engaging and remembering and integrating the stuff that I've already learned and that I just need to kind of go back to and remember or learn again. And I want this podcast to reflect that. And so often I'm just putting so much faith in, oh, if I could just read the right book, or I got to figure out the next thing to consume, the next talk. And that's interesting to me because, I mean, look, content's important. This is content. Thank you for being here. But I think for me, I just have this feeling that if I could just read the right thing, something will become unlocked, some kind of feeling of salvation. And I think that's, for me, an incredibly profound thing to realize, you know, which is, you know, as important as whatever wisdom is contained in the next book, it is what my expectation is for what that wisdom will do. And so often I have this image in my head of like some version of me that will be unlocked. And I think that image is an important thing to notice and pay attention to and possibly see, you know, how that image is getting away from actually contacting direct experience where so much of this work happens to begin with. Does that make sense? If it doesn't, write in theanxietylab@gmail.com. You could always just write in anxietylab@gmail.com. I always love hearing from you. If you have a suggestion for a future topic, a question, criticism, always nice. And I should say right now, I thank everyone who's written in this season. I love reading what you have written, and I appreciate all of it so much, and it means the world. Thank you. Okay. Sorry, it's hot here. Did I say it was hot? I think I did, and so I'm a little bit fried in my brain. I'm going to take some more water. No, I think it's good to comment on the... there are these big ice cubes. They make a lot of noise, and I want to acknowledge it. Does acknowledging it make it any better? Okay. Write me a review. And also, short plug... oh, man, this intro has really gone off the rails now. And now I feel like I'm stuck in it because I promised earlier I wasn't going to re-record it. And now if I do, you won't know that I betrayed my own promise, but I will know. And so I'm sticking it out. Thank you once again for being here. I could land this plane. Let's do it. Oh, speaking of land. Yeah, here we go. I have a gratitude app that I have self-released. I love it. It's free. We talk about gratitude on this episode, as well as a couple previous ones. Just you know, having a gratitude practice is good for mental health. It's just noticing real shit in your life that's going well, that sometimes we overlook because we have what's called a negativity bias. And this is a way to reflect on some gratitude, as well as connect with one other person each week. That connection starts when you share gratitude, and then you hear what the other person said, and they hear what you said. And so it's kind of like this digital pen pal that begins with a gratitude practice. And so, yeah, I'm trying to encourage people to do gratitude in a way that's grounded, where you're just looking at your life and observing, similar to a mindfulness practice. It's not about telling yourself a fake story about why everything's awesome. It's just about kind of touching, contacting what's actually happening versus sometimes the stories in our head about life that aren't always accurate. So for more on that, go to landedapp.net. We're looking for users. We're in private beta for iPhone, also in the description. What else can I say? Oh, Ashley. Yeah, let me get back to just some of her information. AshleyBrookeRoberts.com for everything that she's got going on. Definitely check it out. It's got some really cool stuff there. Ashley_Brooke_Roberts on Instagram, and TikTok is Ashley Brooke Roberts without the underscores. Her TikTok, by the way, is fantastic. Anyway, okay, one more thing. I am a little bit, this month I'm traveling a little bit, and so I may not, there's a chance I won't get the next episode off in time. It might be a little bit delayed. I might be able to do it. Let's just say there's a 40% chance it's going to be delayed. Maybe like 43, 45, 47, no more than a 55% chance that the episode will be 60 to 70% delayed. No, I'll do my best. I think it might happen. But in case it doesn't, this is why. And I thank you for your patience. It's just me doing these episodes. I'm the only person here doing this, working on this podcast. And on that note, rate and review me. That would also help me out a bit. Oh, one more thing. This episode, so we recorded this one a little while back. There's some stuff just in like the first 10 minutes that might evoke or harken back to an earlier era of the pandemic. And that part might sound dated. And normally I take stuff out that sounds dated because I'm always looking after your listener experience. But this time I kept it in just because, we talk about the pandemic a little bit, but it's really just about FOMO. And so it's some good stuff about FOMO. And so I wanted to keep it in. And that's all I got for that. Was that an erotic thing? Would you have noticed or cared? Maybe. I don't know. Anyway, that's all I got. This is the second time I said that's all I got, but this time it's true. Enjoy. I'm here with Ashley Brooke Roberts, ABR. Welcome to the Anxiety Lab.
Thank you so much for having me.
Might there be any anxiety you're working with currently that you'd like to throw into the laboratory?
Wow, that's a great question. I mean, I have like really strong FOMO right now in a way that I have not experienced before, because I moved out of the city and, I'm in New Jersey helping some family members, and I would say I was an average sufferer of FOMO, just kind of in the beginning of my, or before the pandemic. And then now that I'm like apart from friends and it feels like everything is back in full swing in New York. I don't know where you are. Are you in New York?
Yeah, I'm in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I mean, I desperately miss Brooklyn, and I feel this anxiety that I'm missing out on some sort of abstract thing that I cannot put my finger on. So right now I'm dealing with anxiety over my living situation. So I'm just having FOMO about like being, feeling like out of touch with my community and then uncertain about the future. And it happened all at once. I felt like it came out of nowhere. So that's what I'm working with currently.
Let me ask you, what are the, you know, images and thoughts related to this FOMO? Like when you're in this maybe painful experience of like, fuck, I need to be there. Like, what is this there that's happening in your mind?
It's just like a bunch of young, funny friends hanging out, yeah, high-fiving over a picnic, you know, just having like almost like the Three's Company opening credits, just people hanging out and having fun. And I just imagine, I feel like I'm imagining like deep, I'm missing out on deep bonds being formed, which is, you know, once I like dissect it and I look at it, I go, well, I've already formed a lot of deep bonds with people who are very important to me. So I should just continue to cultivate those and not feel like I'm missing out on some like social situation that feels fresh and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. I think, yeah, for me, it's like, in those moments, sometimes it's helpful just to tell myself, like, yeah, that would be fun. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of times I try to rationalize why I don't have that stuff. You know, I'm in a weird place with comedy right now, and so I love kind of making other successful comedians, like, picturing their lives in a way that, like, they're actually miserable, and what I'm doing is right. And so, like, in your moment, like, when I have that type of FOMO or, like, missing out on some fun thing, I'm like, oh, wait, no, it actually wouldn't be that fun because within 20 minutes I'd be bored at the hang or whatever, or I'd be sick of this person, or I'd get stuck talking to somebody I don't like, and then I'd have even more intense FOMO that the person I actually want to talk to is 20 feet away, and now they're leaving. Fuck. And some of that is true, and maybe that's a good way to kind of balance this enchanted picture in our heads. But I also think it's important for me to like just be like, no, that maybe that is a loss, but it's okay that it's a loss. Like it's not something that's ultimately critical to my well-being. In fact, there are also things around where I am currently that can nourish me in certain ways.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea of, like, thinking of the reality of the situation, which is that, like, I would be uncomfortable. There are probably ants at the picnic. I forgot to put on sunscreen, and now I'm, like, thinking I can only be outside for, like, 30 more minutes. There are a lot of factors that lead to the situation not being perfect. It's interesting you brought up comedy, because I feel like I'm also having – I kind of made an agreement with myself that, you know, once things started opening back up, I wouldn't put so much pressure on myself to do the stand-up hustle. You know, I was like, I will relieve myself of that anxiety of constantly feeling like I have to, like, do a show or be at a show. And then when things started...
And that was anxiety you had previous to...
Yes, yes. And it was very intense. And, like, when it was taken away from me, I was able to see it for what it was, like how much it had affected me. And I was just talking to someone the other day, actually, and saying that like a 10-minute stand-up show is like the equivalent of a 6-hour waitressing shift in terms of anxiety. Like, you know, like getting there and then talking to people. And the performing part is like the easiest part. And then the afterwards and everything around it. But so then when things started opening up, I felt that like, that anxiety start to come back of like, oh, I gotta go start doing shows and like, you know, letting people know that I have not moved, that I'm like close enough to New York, I can come do shows. And that's been interesting having to sort of grapple with that. The good thing about this year is that I have the peace of mind that I experienced from like being cut off from all of that stimulus was so rewarding that it has allowed me to not get too much not to like fling myself too hard into that stand-up hustle anxiety. Are you experiencing that?
Yeah, I've made it a point. When COVID hit, I just stopped doing it. And most people we talk to, when we tell people we stopped doing stand-up or comedy during COVID, they would respond, yeah, well, so did everyone. Well, it's like, no, I wasn't even doing Zoom shows. I stopped giving a shit about social media for a while. And I think I was looking, I had this sense that maybe there was something else that wanted to kind of come out. I mean, I know that sounds corny, but, you know, the more I have reflected, it's like creativity, this creative impulse is so expansive and kind of formless and ever changing, and to kind of every day jam it into this rigid form. And at the time, I didn't know what that other thing was. I just knew that maybe it was possible, and then to kind of just continue to not do stand-up, and then, which got harder and harder, because then we started having outdoor shows, and like then it's like, okay, I'm getting further and further away from the map. And so like then it required even more restraint, and there were times, and there are still times where I'm like, yeah, what if I just wrote bits and released them on, you know, what if I started a TikTok, or what if I did this, I would have X amount by this, maybe that would be enough to fill out. And I go into those what if scenarios and kind of berate myself. But I also think other things have emerged, such as maybe this podcast and the ways that I want to actually express myself. And I think for me in particular, a lot of my comedy was anxiety related, and it didn't always, there was so much nuance I wanted to present, and I couldn't quite connect with audiences in a comedy environment over the nature of the mind and that kind of shit. But yeah, that's, and so yeah, like, and now there's like, it's really being tested, because it's like this way I've had of defining myself through visibility and how I'm seen in a certain scene is starting to fuck with me a little bit, because this other thing I've built as far as connecting more with this inner desire and sense of well-being, that's really something that happens that I have to just nurture. And you know, my girlfriend, and there are people around me who can kind of meet me in that space, but yeah, it's just a little bit vulnerable to other people's achievements and stuff.
Totally.
It requires more vigilance. That was a long answer, too long for a host of a podcast. So thank you for listening there.
No, I completely relate with all of it. And I feel like there's so much, like, I know when you're, a lot of the material that I read specifically about like the creative process and anxiety over identity and, you know, how we relate to our work in terms of self-definition, there's a lot of the idea of shoulds come up a lot, you know, like when you start saying should, I should be doing this, or I should do this, or I should, and like how much, how that can spike so much anxiety for me specifically. Like I should reach out and say that I'm available in New York, and I should book a show at some venue and pack it out. And then that is also just such an incredible marker for when I am putting myself in a mental situation that is making me uncomfortable and is causing me anxiety. As soon as I start saying should, it's like a compass, like an alarm goes off in my brain that's like, well, let's not trust the shoulds.
Yeah, shoulds kind of are a symptom of some level of cerebral existence. You know, you're not in touch with maybe a felt desire. You're more just, it's a shame thing.
Totally, 100%.
Yeah, the other thing, it's like, yeah, when we're doing stand-up, watching other comedians on social media, that kind of echoes around in our brains. You know what I mean? Like my whole mental world was, oh, these are the important people. Like this is reality, is X person is very, it's very important that this person saw my set last night. And then it's like, once you kind of unplug from that, you're like, no, that's a little bit of a, I was in a little bit of a trance. I mean, I guess what we all have in common is that we're in trances. I mean, but everyone's trance is different. We all have different maps for what we think we need. And I think, yeah, the slowing down kind of loosens that. But yeah, as I said, like the process of trusting that is hard, because externally the world is continuing and, you know, people are getting that traditional validation.
Yeah. And I want it. I also want that traditional validation. But I also am like, you know, it's I think you, this all started because you originally asked me what anxiety I'm feeling, and it is all rooted in the anxiety of trying to figure out where I'm going to live and what I'm, how I'm going to operate in that society. So yeah, I'm feeling anxiety over what this next chapter in my life will be.
Let me ask you this. You were talking a lot about shoulds. Do you have some sense that you should know which way to go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've always operated from a pretty strong internal compass. I feel like I've always kind of known instinctually what I wanted to pursue or go after, or I had just kind of a vision of myself in the future. And this is one of the first times in my life that that has been very blurry.
Right. Yeah, I can totally relate to that. Like for me, so much of this anxiety is this expectation that I should be able to square it all up and just like know. And right now I'm trying to be in this more playful, like, yeah, let's take action. Let's do a show if that's what I'm debating. And then let's just see how I feel. And maybe the next moment will reveal itself. Or let's just basically trust that it's okay to not know. And that's been a huge challenge for me, and it continues to be difficult. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely does.
So yeah, I'd love to talk about some of these anxiety dispatch videos that you've put up, because they're so, I think they're deceptively wise. I mean, you clearly have all of the chops of a bona fide entertainment professional, and yet there is deep wisdom coursing throughout all of these. And yeah, anyone listening, I would point you to her. Well, where do you want the views?
Let's do Instagram.
Nice. I'll put that in the episode description. And I especially love the one about someone. So someone calls in and you are playing the anxiety dispatcher. And this person is such a common situation where they're at the cash register somewhere, let's say like a cafe, and they get the change, they get back their order, and they don't know whether to stay there to organize their shit or to just do it afterwards. And it's just like this mind fuck of like, yeah, you're at the counter. Like, you don't want to walk away with just a sloppy handful of your coffee and your whatever sandwich and then receipt and then a bunch of change, like all just in a heap. But you also feel self-conscious holding up the line to organize. And then it's just one of these weird kind of mind fucks. And the advice you gave was just first and foremost to that person, just remember you're a human being who exists, and it's not your fault. It's just the circumstances that you're currently occupying. And you're, I get, you know, in telling this person that, you're speaking to such a core feeling in us anxious people, which is just this basic feeling of like, fuck, it's me. And yeah, sorry to completely sterilize your joke into a clinical takeaway, but I just want to compliment you that the wisdom is there.
Thank you. I will take that compliment and run all the way to my diary with it and record it later. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun. Actually, I find TikTok to make me very anxious, but they started on TikTok, and my therapist was like, I was talking about comedy, and my therapist, this is in, I guess, December 2020 is when I started. And she was like, you need another comedic outlet. And, or she's, I think she was like, you need another outlet. And we kind of boiled it down to like, either I was going to start running or I was going to join TikTok. And I was like, you know what? I'll just do TikTok. That seems like it's a lot easier than creating a running habit. And I started TikTok. It's fun. There's a lot of judgment there for, I feel like, older people being on TikTok. I feel it was like, there was like, I felt judged, but I was just having fun. And then there was a trend going around where people were pretending to be 911 dispatchers. So, but they were just doing like really actual 911 calls. And I think the joke would be, if I remember correctly, the joke is like they get so upset that they go out to help the person, or they're like bad as the 911 dispatcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I just took the form and I made it about the anxiety around sending an email, because I wish there was a service I could call to help me send an email. I've exhausted all my family members asking them if this email sounds normal, you know? So I was like, I need a professional service. So I made that video, and then it got like a really good response, and people kept leaving comments like, can you do one about this situation, about this situation? And so now from that point on, I just take a comment and I write one around the situation. So they're all like based on user generated ideas. And so the thing about the wisdom, what I'm trying to say is I feel like a responsibility to my audience to give them wisdom, because they are asking like their real life scenarios that make them nervous. And I try and just be as like kind and compassionate as possible, as if I am talking to my, like my child or a loved one or like my little brother. Like I think about like how I would guide someone that I just have, you know, a ton of compassion and care for. And that is where the wisdom comes from. But yeah, the one about the change was fun, because I've been in that situation so many times. And I think it is really important to remember that like great historical figures struggled trying to put their change in their coin purse at the line, in like the front of the line. And like, you're just part of a long line of humans not knowing what to do with their change, and to kind of reflect on that instead of feeling like, so isolated, because that's what that moment is. You feel isolated and alone, and you feel like the one that's causing the issue, and that's being cut off from that is, I think, where all the anxiety comes from. So,
yeah, I mean, it's such a it's a small example, but I think that knee-jerk felt sense. I mean, and this is so characteristic of, I think, my anxiety and a lot of people's anxiety, is this sense of like, I am the only one who would have a hard time with this. I think that's the sense at the time.
Yes. And sorry to interrupt, but like one more thing I want to say is that the most beautiful thing has happened in these videos. It's like people will give each other advice, because I can't get to all the comments. I'll have thousands and thousands of comments of like, can you do one about this situation or do one about this scenario? And like, I don't get to them. And then other people in my comments will give each other advice and be like, oh my God, I thought I was the only one who did that. And I find that really, you know what, if you want to, I'm realizing we told your listeners to direct me to Instagram, but they should go to TikTok, because that way they can leave a comment themselves and I could maybe answer it, because that's how I do it, is I answer it through TikTok. Yeah, but it's created like a little world of people supporting each other.
That's awesome. And it's off of, yeah, your maybe unpacking of this moment that previously they felt unseen in. And that's beautiful. And, you know, so you're touched by that. And then where is that appreciation for that moment when you're picturing this picnic high five that you're missing out on? It's nowhere to be seen, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. And I mean, for me, it's like, I guess this is, I mean, this was the one that really got me, and it's so, the anxiety, that felt sense of like, oh, this is on me. It's not the world that's confusing and complex and some people can be assholes and whatever. It's me. And that, for me, that's been, you know, I grew up with a lot of family drama and a lot of dysfunctional people with layers of dysfunction within themselves. And yet, despite all of that, it's like, oh no, if I only had said this at the dinner table, everything would be fine and no one would have any problems. And that's, yeah, and I think that's such a core component. Going back to what you said earlier about shoulds, it's like there's this idea that we somehow, through some experience or conditioning, have constructed that we should exist in this way, or reality should be this way. And that's maybe the assumption that we can challenge and kind of open up to these feelings of reality being complex, bad things happening, and that just being what it is without needing to fix it, I guess.
Oh, yes. I mean, you're speaking to a principle that I have just tried so many times to really incorporate into my everyday life, which is just that, you know, open hand principle, not clinging to anything. Because that's what a should is. It's like clinging to an idea of a perfect self or like a different version of me that does the right thing. And it's like, instead of just accepting the reality of the situation and like existing in that reality, like I'm just most of the time going through life trying to cling to like, I should be doing this or this, just grasping onto ideas that are not my current reality. And it's like, well, I should just, what's the harm in just letting the shoulders drop and accepting the situation for how it is? You know, sometimes this happens. Let me tell you a little scenario and tell me if this has ever happened to you. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone that you cannot stand, okay? And you want to get out of this conversation so bad, and you're thinking about who you should talk to, and like how you can, I'd rather be talking to this person, or like, how can I end this conversation? And then a part of you goes like, well, I am in this conversation, so like, let me just see what I can learn from it. And then you kind of release all of these ideas of like, I should get out of this, I should be talking to someone else. And then you just exist in that conversation?
Well, I will the next time, I hope. I can recall a few times where I've done something similar and it did register even at the time as transformational. However, I don't think it happens often enough, and I could also be like very petty. Actually a perfect example of my pettiness is like where I thought you were going with this was the scenario where like the person I think I'm stuck talking to, this whatever awful person, all of a sudden they reject me or at least I think they reject me. Maybe they actually did have to go to the bathroom or whatever. But like, and then so now all of a sudden this person is desirable. And it's fair. I'm embarrassed to say this in my late 30s that I still have this kind of petty, very status-oriented brain. People always talk about having like an inner child. I think I also have an inner teenager who's like very, very status obsessed, unfortunately.
I just reject it. I really do. I find it to be like, I think that it caused me a lot of trouble as a youth and in my 20s. For sure. And still to some degree when I am around very successful people. But I just lie to myself internally. And I like something that I developed in my mid-20s was just telling myself a lie about my own status that then made me feel better. So like if I was talking to someone who I thought was like better than me, had more success than me, I would say in my head, they don't know that I'm a New York Times bestselling author. And like, that's okay. Uh-huh. I don't have to tell them, but like, they're going to find out. They're going to be a little embarrassed when they find out, even though I'm not a New York Times bestselling author, but I would level the playing field in my mind. And then that is just a tool that I use whenever I feel strange about status. I lie to myself to make myself feel better.
I like it. I mean, and technically it's a falsehood, but on another level, maybe like that lie gets you closer to who you actually are because it's breaking up this other lie of like your unworthiness.
Yeah. And also like, exactly. It breaks up the lie of my unworthiness. And also like, it could be true one day. I could be a New York Times bestselling author one day. And maybe they'll look back on that situation and be like, huh, I was talking down to her. And here she is having written the most popular book of 2025. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, even if you don't become a New York Times bestselling author, that person should still look back in regret because you still deserve that much love. Some would say more love.
That is true. Even more importantly, is that truth?
And so I want to move on to self-care and compassion, which come up every episode, which I am fine with that. But I don't know about you, but I always viewed self-care and compassion as like these fluffy, inauthentic, Like they exist outside of actual wisdom. They're not really that important. But the more I consider it, the more I realize like this intense clinging we do to who we think we have to be and kind of this should-driven energy is in a way just a revulsion from this other false identity we carry of being like this rotten person to the core. Like that's another false identity, and that's why to me I'm realizing self-care is deeply authentic because it pulls us away from this other bad kind of fake identity that we're unconsciously buying into.
Yes. I never really thought about it as being like, I never thought about the idea that I might view it as separate than wisdom, you know, that fluffiness, the compassion and kindness. It is, you're right. It is not separate than wisdom, but you also touched on something that just this idea of like sort of belittling, not purposefully, but sort of thinking down on quote unquote fluffy, like tools in that way, the kindness, the mm-hmm. compassion. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I felt that, I know you've talked about gratitude on the podcast before. I think,
a little bit. Yeah. Feel free to share what your experience has been.
I just felt that way. I feel so strongly I've had that experience with gratitude in the sense that I really just judged it as being fluffy, as being separate than wisdom, being separate than sort of a deep, respectable knowledge. Okay? So it feels like it's like some sort of new age fluffy thing that I would... That's corny. And yet it works. And so that's really like an issue I've run across. It's like it has a real effect. It really works for me. There's power to it. And so I wonder.
Were you kind of like annoyed when it started working?
Yes. Yes. Because in my mind, everything that is valuable is difficult. Right? So everything that's going to help should be hard. And it's like, you're just saying that I sit down, I write 10 things I'm grateful for, and then that's going to have like an effect on my mood throughout the day. Like instinctually, I reject that because I feel like coming to peace of mind has to be a battle. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
A battle or some, yeah, like earned achievement.
Yes. Yeah.
So do you have a like gratitude habit or?
I do. Yeah. And it's not consistent, but it is like, it's kind of like I'll do it consistently for 3 months and then take a month off. But it's just listing 5 to 10 things that I'm grateful for that day. And it could be anything. Yeah. I try not to repeat things, but if I do repeat things, that's okay. And I notice that when I'm really in a bad spot, when I'm very depressed and things are dark, when I'm being haunted mm-hmm. by myself, when I'm being haunted by myself and I start doing the gratitude list, it is just like a lifeline.
And it's important because we're what I've said before too, is that like, we're always kind of under the radar logging all the shitty aspects of like my tendency is to kind of, I'm always chewing on everything that's wrong. So like it makes sense that, you know, the counter ammunition is also a little bit repetitive, you know,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
because shame is so repetitive.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And like boring in its repetition.
Yes.
You said something earlier. You're talking about kind of like living from a place of like being in tune or being just the difference between pushing yourself and like living like a connected, intuitive, I forget the word you use, but it's basically the idea of like living a life that's aligned, and that I think is what happiness is for me, and it's something I constantly chase, which I don't think you can chase it, which is a paradox that kills me.
Yeah, like it defies expectation. It's more spontaneous and alive. And so by definition, we can't plan for it. I mean, we can, whatever, plant the seeds that might make them more likely to grow, such, you know, the seeds being gratitude and maybe paying attention.
Yeah, and I also feel like just I want to cut down on the amount of like willful yearning I'm doing on a day-to-day basis and like more. Uh-huh. And because that is just like an anxiety generator, you know, like feeling like I have to like push myself constantly in different avenues. It doesn't really, it could be anything, and more of just kind of like living from a place of being connected and just being okay with how things are.
Mm. Right, because sometimes that longing gets in the way of that connection, that second part of what you just said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that reminds me of this quote that I prepared. So let me throw this into the fire. This is from a meditation teacher I really like, Orin J. Sofer. This was from a recent talk that he gave. "The sense of getting somewhere is disconnecting us from what we already have. It's creating some imagined future that we're moving towards. Instead, we can turn the mind onto itself and discover something that's always been there. It's so close, it's so intimately a part of who and what we are that we overlook it. In all of our chasing, we're only moving away from that which we long for." How's that? Does that do anything for you?
I love it. Yeah. I read a quote the other day. I'm doing the artist way currently with like a group of people. And are you familiar with it? And yeah. There's a whole, one of the quotes was like, only when we stop speaking, only when we stop asking and talking do we hear what's always been there. And I was just thinking about that in terms of, this might be like a little bit of a tangent off of what you're saying. Is that okay?
No, please. Yeah, please.
Okay, so part of my journaling practice, I journal in the morning, is I like ask myself questions and then I answer them. And I find that that is like so incredibly helpful because I can just be struggling with an issue or a question or, and like that quote talking about trying to get to like a future scenario, and then once I like write it on paper, I like will ask myself to answer the question, and then I'll take a different color pen and I will answer the question to myself. I always know the answer, but I don't know the answer until I've gotten quiet enough and asked myself to tell myself the answer. So it's almost like I'm creating this like drama of, I don't know. And like, maybe this or maybe that. And it's like I'm creating this like chorus of confusion when really it's there in the center if I just ask it to present itself.
Wow, I love that, in the center. And to me, that is what the quote is getting at also. And I think this is might be like the core of what I'm working on currently. And I talk about this in therapy all the time, just this notion of like kind of, you know, what is that true desire and how to identify it. And my therapist always talks about this true desire as being a little bit quieter than the other ones, just like a little bit softer. And also, by the way, I always, the stuff about like quiet down and see what emerges or what you're looking for is right there in front of you. It's, you know, if I read that, where I did read this stuff in my 20s and I'd kind of just roll my eyes at it. And now it's like, yeah, I think I can tap into it and I can, on occasion at least, experience a sense of myself or a sense of something that is outside of my inner dialogue. It's not just my inner dialogue.
Okay, first off, I need to know exactly what your therapist said about a true desire being more quiet than the others, because that seems like gold. What is that about?
Yeah, it does seem like gold. I wish I could fully unpack it. But unfortunately, that is the extent of what I remember him saying. And I'll just say for now, like I am trying to, I think for me, the process is to first identify the louder, more reactionary voices and seeing if they can quiet down and then, you know, kind of cultivating that space for the quieter thing to be recognized.
So let's give it, I have a hypothetical scenario. So like imagine it is someone who's trying to figure out what to do with their life, right? And they have all these ideas that like, I should do this or I should do that or I should be pursuing this. And then really that applies to this idea, what your therapist says applies to the possibility that like the true desire of what one wants is there, just not as loud because it is, it's kind of just a constant. Is it because it's not threatened by these feelings of shame and safety and so it doesn't get as loud because since it's true, it can just kind of exist on its own and there's not like a knee-jerk reaction to it, which increases the volume?
I think that's possible. Let me add this to the pot too. For me, it's not always that, okay, well, here's my real desire and then here's all the fake ones. I think in a way, the real desire exists within the fake one. So for you or for me, let me just try to do this for you, even though that's probably not correct. But, you know, if you're thinking about this magical park hang that you're missing out on, you know, maybe that's not the false desire. Let's get this out of the way to find the real one. Maybe the real one is within there somewhere. So you are, maybe we are looking to connect, or there is some level of human connection that you're craving, and that's real. And yet I think what the distortion is the shape that we put on the desire. It's like it has to happen in this way. There's something about this park hang on this day that's critical, when in fact, maybe I could walk out my front door and go meet a friend and have an amazing connection there. And like it's more possible than we think it is. Does that, how's that? Is that anything?
I love it. I wanted to, do you know who Bunny Michael is?
Mm-mm.
They are a creator on Instagram and they do this thing called the Higher Self Project, which is kind of like they give themselves advice when they're struggling. And it is sort of similar to the journaling prompt that I was talking about. So I would just, that's just a recommendation. I think you would enjoy the Higher Self Project.
The Higher Self. Okay.
Yeah.
I will make a note of that. Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, was there, I feel like I didn't completely, I just presented a new idea. I don't know that I've
satisfied your inquiry. No, you have. I feel like they both, it's not a new idea. I feel like it exists simultaneously hand in hand with the first one, which is that I like the idea that the constant desire is maybe, or like the true desire is quieter. I like that because I agree with that. Instinctually, that feels right because I think that you cause a lot of friction. For example, this, no, the parking is the way that I will get, okay, let's take the parking. The parking is the way that I will get that connection I so deeply crave. It's the only way I can get it, right? So like, let's say that I have that thought. Like I have to be at this parking, otherwise I don't matter. I'm a little piece of doo-doo on the bottom of my shoe, right? So that's like all the thoughts that are related to that. And my unconscious mind knows that that is not true. And so that there's a rejection of the idea, which makes that idea grow because it creates a friction almost. Like now it's like the sore spot in my mind. And so now I'm thinking about it and I'm fixated on it because that friction is there. When like the true desire, I just want connection, is quieter because there's nothing, my mind isn't arguing with it. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, because the park anxiety is, you know, you're trying to make yourself right. But then in pushing away that park FOMO, you're also trying to make yourself right. It's the same anxiety. It just looks a little bit different now.
Yes. And that tug of war creates like a sense of weight. It's making it more important than it actually is. And so then it's everything gets blurry and I miss the actual true desire, which is like I just want some connection. I think also one more thing about conflicting desires is it's like, I think it's like a false ideal that you can exist without conflicting desires. Like, I feel like just the way that I am, which is mercurial and, you know, given to circumstance, and it's my desires will conflict at some point, and that's this absolute. Because one time I hired a life coach years ago. Okay, I hired a life coach because I was like, I have to figure out. I had all these conflicting desires about what I wanted to do professionally, and I was like, you know, I have to figure out my one true path, and I'm going to hire a life coach, and she is going to crack the code, right? I've had so much, I put so much importance and power in her hands to tell me what I wanted. And after $2,000, I realized that I exist, I want a lot of different things, and like things conflict, and that it's like, no one's going to be able to tell me what my one thing is, because my one thing is made up of a bunch of little things. And so it's like, I just have to relax into that and not fight it, because really the fighting it is causing absolute stagnation. Okay. Cause I'm so hung up on figuring this out and cracking the code of like what my one thing is, that it's causing me not to do any of my things.
And it's hard to do because we're in environments that reward people for narrowing into one thing.
Absolutely.
You know? And then that creates even more inner conflict. Mm-hmm. And I think, it's nice that more of these conversations are happening. We're becoming more aware of the complex nature of and the ever-shifting nature of desires and reality in a way that maybe we can exist more complexly. And be okay in that, you know, we can kind of validate that in each other, I guess. One of the teachings that I've read is with regards to the three marks of existence, which are just a part of life. One is pain. The other one is impermanence, that, you know, nothing lasts. And the third one is no self. There is no, like, we don't exist as any type of fixed entity. I am this, I am this, I am good, I am bad, whatever I am. You know, destined to be on stage, all of these narratives. It's more just fluid. And so when we are at odds with that is when the most suffering happens, is when we try to cram ourselves into these neat boxes of this is who I am, or, you know, expect things to last forever, or expect that there will be no pain. That's where so much anxiety and depression can happen. Mm-hmm. Is just be the process of being at odds with those three marks, right?
Yes, yes. And I think that is like, I heard that years ago, and I connected it to the grasping at things and like trying to go through life with an open hand. So I'm not grasping onto an identity, or I'm not grasping onto a relationship. And then that ties to what I was saying earlier about trying to grasp onto ideas about like who I should be. And it's like trying to cling on to this like perfect Ashley or this future self that I can't hold on to. I can't grab. It's not fixed.
Yeah. So here's that. This was a Sharon Salzberg passage that really meant a lot to me when I read it yesterday. It's very simple, but it was a good reminder for me. This is with regards to over planning. I came to see that I was operating on the belief that if I could just plan things thoroughly enough, I could control them and make them happen. Planning made me feel secure. The insight I gained from closely observing my restlessness during meditation led me to later examine the anxiety behind my overplanning. So, and then she related to those emotions with compassion. So, yeah, for me, it's like, that speaks to this idea of like, yeah, no, I am, like, this planning, and look, planning needs to happen. We have lives that, you know, necessitate making plans and using our brains for sure. But this, what causes anxiety for me is this weight, the burden I put on planning is that I expect it to guarantee an outcome or some level of critical safety that can never be secured.
Interesting.
And that's maybe goes back to like, yeah, that's one of those, that's not the quiet voice. That's something else that's in the grips of something that it hasn't yet resolved. It's like when I, you know, when she sat with it, you know, for me, it really was about not getting caught up in the planning, but really just letting it sit and seeing how I feel in my body. And then just through that, becoming aware that, oh, wait, this is a reaction to something, some deeper level of unease and unworthiness. And until I've, you know, reconciled and have kind of accepted that this is how I feel, it's hard to kind of touch with true desire, because then my mind is just, I'm more in like this reactive thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love to plan. Okay, I find this quote to be very touching on something deep inside. I love to plan, and I what I get anxiety about is when I cannot plan, because I feel like I don't know how, like, what it is I'm going for. So it's kind of like the conflicting desires. So I like the idea that you get, I mean, not that I like the idea, but I find it interesting that, like, the way that your anxiety is activated by planning is when your plans do not result in you, in the preferred outcome, whether that's emotional or material. That's what you were saying, right? Where you put like emphasis on the idea of the outcome of the plan and when that doesn't live up to that.
It's more like when I'm in that planning anxiety, my mind thinks that it can kind of land somewhere that will be safe and that I'll feel good.
Ooh.
You know, I'm trying to like secure myself.
Wow. Okay. Yes. And I think that I like that you just said that, I put it in those terms, because I find that like that anxiety stops me from making plans, because I'm like looking at all the options and being like, well, none of these will give me X, Y, Z, which is the ultimate goal, you know, whether it be a feeling or a financial situation, you know.
Right, right. So it's almost like you're going too far the other way.
Yeah.
Like, no, we need to plan. We need to plan with an understanding that it's not going to guarantee anything. It can make certain things more likely that we want. And that's maybe good enough.
Yes.
But I mean, it's go ahead.
It's just seeing that plans are human, you know, like plans have flaws. I'm specifically thinking about like we're making wedding plans right now.
And oh, so congratulations.
Thank you. And so, but every sort of option, it's like, well, there's something wrong with every option that we want to do. And it's like, it's causing us to just not plan. Like, we're like, well, we'll take a couple weeks off and we'll sit with it and see how we feel. And instead of just, we're trying to create the perfect scenario. And that is not, that doesn't exist. And so it's just like about accepting the fact that we just have to make the plans that work and then let them happen on their own and not try and control every aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that. And also like, yeah, what we're like, these planning sessions can also like these moments that are kind of leading up to the wedding can be fun too, when you're just talking and, you know, there's life to be lived right now too, that's perhaps as important as what we're trying to plan and do is, you know, we could feel love right now. We could feel open hearts right now to an extent. I mean, a wedding's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but no, that's an important thing to remember.
Cool. So, we go about an hour and some change on average. You had mentioned something that I'm curious about and don't have a lot of background with, which is inner housework.
Okay, listen, I emailed you that, the inner housework. I don't think that it doesn't have a name. I coined that name as shorthand for what I do when I'm feeling incredibly anxious. And it's a tool that I will share with you now, which is that I have a house built inside of my head. It is a physical space that I can visualize. I guess it's not physical if it's completely thought-based, but it's a visualization. I have a way to get there. So if I'm having extreme anxiety, I will lay down and take the walk to that house in my mind and then go in the house and then kind of explore the house and spend some time in that house. So I've created a safe space for myself that exists within my mind, and I call it my inner house. So it doesn't have a name, a specific name. It's not a technique that was really taught to me. I just did it in a meditation. It was in a group meditation. Someone walked us into a house in our minds, and then I have kept that house. Uh-huh. I have decorated it, and I've spent a lot of time in it. So that is what I meant when I said inner house work.
I love that. So it's like a visualization.
Yeah, it's a visualization meditation.
And is the house, so you're saying the house is more or less the same? And
mm-hmm. It's the same, but what I do in the house is different every time. Sometimes I take a bath. Sometimes I eat cookies. Sometimes I watch television. It depends on what room I go into.
While this is being visualized, are you like laying down, eyes closed, sitting in a chair?
Yes, absolutely.
And can this take, like, could this be like a short practice, or do you have like a length of time?
It is a short practice, and I try and like involve the going into the house and the exiting the house. Like those are really, like I try and bookend it with those two actions. Even though sometimes life pulls me out of it before I have a chance to like physically exit it, or not physically, visually exit the house, but it is something I like to do. If I'm feeling very anxious, I'll lay down and do it. But it's also very helpful for flying. If anyone has anxiety with flying, I would encourage you to build a little house in your mind that you can go to that you feel totally safe and at peace in, a space that is all yours.
Yeah, I think I'm going to use that for sleeping. I often have problems staying asleep. And
yes, I use it for sleeping all the time.
I love that. And it speaks to, I don't hope I'm not offending you when I say this, but this is one of those things where when I was 20, I would have just kind of, you know, thumbed my nose at as being kind of corny. And it's like, the more you think about it though, the more like we're always existing in some kind of mental environment of our own creation.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to what we said earlier about breaking the pattern, like this is just adding some intention and positivity that we deserve into it. Because at times, you know, my inner atmosphere cannot be a very pleasant one to exist in. Mm-hmm. I'm always just, sometimes I'm arguing with someone, sometimes I'm imagining someone talking down to me. All these awful things that may or may not happen is often my inner landscape.
Well, and you, I think you touched on it when you say we exist in these mental environments of our own creation, but I would just like to add to that, they are of our own creation, but not usually of like actual choices that we've made. It's, you know, sort of an amalgamation of experiences and fears and anxieties that create these mental environments. And so when we choose like what that mental environment looks like, there's a lot of power in that and a lot of calmness in that power.
Yeah. Take ownership of the fact that we have agency there.
Yes. Absolutely. You know, this is reminding me, I want to write a book about this, and I want to, so listeners, get ready. In a year, I'm going to have a how to build, interiors for your time of need is what it's going to be called. And it's going to be called about building a mental interior for when you need it. Because mine has just double, triple, quadrupled the payoff in time invested in putting down that foundation. The benefits from it have been wonderful.
I love that. This is actually a project you're planning to do.
Yeah, I started it like 2 years ago. Interiors for Your Time of Need was the name of it. And then I sort of abandoned it because it was like right at the beginning of, well, it wasn't right at the beginning of quarantine, but close enough. I can blame it on the pandemic, okay? And then I think I did my usual thing, which is like get excited about a project, work on it for a month, put it aside, come back to it in 3 months. But then those 3 months when I was coming back to it, everything sort of changed for me. And then I am going to do it. I'm declaring it on this podcast to hold myself accountable that it is something I will do.
Wow, that is commendable, and I am excited for this book. Well, Ashley, we're about at the end here, so why don't I give you the last minute or two to speak to your fans directly.
Wow. Hello. I'm so excited that you're here. Thank you for going on this conversation journey with us. I truly appreciate you. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to reach out to me. I'm sure my socials, I will just say my Instagram now is Ashley_Brooke_Roberts. And then my full name, Ashley Brooke Roberts, on TikTok. I don't think you can message people on TikTok because I have gotten a lot of messages via Instagram, people saying that they reached out to me, wanted to message me on TikTok, but we're unable to. But yes, reach out to me. Talk to me. I love conversations. I love any and all positive feedback, and I will not accept any negative feedback, so please do not send it. JK.
You can send that to me.
thank you so much for listening to all of this. I hope that this was an enjoyable conversation. I enjoyed it, so I assume that any fan of mine would also enjoy it.
I think that's a safe bet. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Ashley Brooke Roberts. Once again, check out the description for all of the info on her, theanxietylab@gmail.com if you want to talk to me. And thanks, as always, for being here. As I mentioned, maybe I'll see you in 2 weeks or shortly after. And apologies and thank you for understanding. I'm putting this out myself. It's just a staff of one. And so sometimes these things will happen. Throw me a rating. Can you do it? Can you do it? Will you do it? Are you strong enough? Goodbye and be well.